Starseeds, and welcome to A Cosmic Journey,
the podcast where we talk about everything in the universe from the physical
to the metaphysical. I'm Demi Wilde.
And I'm Jay Maceo. This week, we've got cosmic news stories. Demi teaches us Sextrology 101. For our Patreon listeners, and
Jay teaches us about the four agreements with his cosmic insights. And we take a deep dive into a black hole to cast some spells with witches.
Splash. That was splashing into the black hole. I need to work on my Kasplash.
I love the Kasplash.
What happened with you this week? What's going on?
Oh, well, I have a visitor. We have a visitor, actually.
We do.
This is my mom's dog, Noogie.
Noogie!
He's been staying with me he will be staying with me for the next 6 weeks or so. My mom's in South Carolina working. And so I'm stuck with him. He does not leave my side. He will not leave my side.
I've seen.
Yeah. What else? I had lunch with my friend on Wednesday. Thursday, sorry. And then I've been writing a lot.
Nice.
Yeah, I've been writing a lot, actually.
Nice.
How about you? What have you been doing?
I started a new day job, you know, so I'm working from home. The day job, it's kind of funny. We talked about this last week. Mm-hmm. So working from home is something that I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to sit on the couch and watch Netflix and go back. Yeah. So it's kind of cool. And you made fun of me for this last week, but this is like what has been really helping. It's ingenious. So I rearranged my furniture in my living room to be an office every day right before work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not in my living room anymore. And it's like the couch is all the way out of the way. Anyhow. It's my long-winded way of saying that it's great, and I've been my songs have been picking up speed on Spotify. If you don't follow me on Spotify, follow Jay Maceo. Shameless plug, way too early, so I apologize.
Nah,
but
do it.
Yeah. But it's we're doing, and definitely follow this show if you're not following A Cosmic Journey.
Totally.
Yeah.
We've got new listeners this week.
We do. We have new listeners in New Jersey,
Astoria, New York,
Mead Valley, California,
Imperial, California,
Beverly Hills, California,
Indianapolis, Indiana,
Snellville, Georgia,
Pinapolis, Sao Paulo,
Zanin, Limpopo,
Clichy, Ile-de-France,
and Guaraman. You make fun of me so much. Why are you always making fun of me? Gumarwin. And that's in Himachal Pradesh. Thank you. Even send us a comment if we're butchering the town of your name and we'll pronounce it correctly.
We apologize. I would not have any better with that one either, though, myself.
But thank you, our new listeners. We really appreciate you.
Yes, thank you for listening, guys. We have a first review.
We do. Can I read that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have our first review. We realized that this was left a while ago. We didn't know this. I'm so happy we have our first review by Tishy92. That rhymes.
Yes, it does.
I love things that rhyme. And Tishy says, "The hour flies by with this amazing podcast. I love how I can learn about multiple subjects. These two, that's speaking of us, are so interesting and honest. I feel like I'm sitting in the room with them like old friends enjoying a great conversation."
Yay! Tish,
yes, Tishy, thank you for listening.
Thank you, Tish.
And you guys leave us reviews, tell us what you like, and be like Tishy.
Absolutely. I wanted to mention we had another pseudo review.
Really?
So while my mom is working in South Carolina, she's been kind of meeting some new people and stuff, and she has been working with this guy. His name is Dimitrik.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing pictures of their kids and stuff. And so, of course, she showed a picture of me. And she goes, "Where's he from?" And she explained where I'm from and what I do and stuff. And he goes, "I think I listened to his podcast."
Nice.
So I was like, what? It was so random and so weird. But it was, like, super cool. The universe, hello. So random, yeah.
That's, like, so much of, you know, people wonder what the universe does. That's one of those things that is, like, so... Everything had to fit in a perfect way. Like, how did this happen?
Exactly.
So that's some great stuff, Starseeds. That's why we call you Starseeds, because you're from the stars.
Please leave us a comment on iTunes or wherever you listen to this podcast at. We will read it on here on our next show.
We will.
Let's get into some news. So Nobel Peace Prizes have been awarded this week.
Ooh, yes. Did I get one?
No. Maybe one day.
Peace
maybe, maybe one day. But I found these two articles that were about the Nobel Peace Prizes that were awarded. So the Nobel Prize in Physics was awarded to three astrophysicists on Tuesday for work that was literally out of this world.
Mm.
They are Roger Penrose, an Englishman, Reinhard Genzel, a German, and Andrea Ghez, an American. They were recognized for their work on black holes.
Mm.
Dr. Penrose, a mathematician at Oxford University, was awarded half of the approximately $1.1 million prize for proving that black holes must exist if Albert Einstein's theory of gravity, known as general relativity, is right. The second half was split between Dr. Genzel and Dr. Ghez for their relentless and decades-long investigation of the dark monster here in the center of our own galaxy, gathering evidence of being a supermassive black hole.
Whoa, I almost played that song today.
Yeah, I know.
I actually did play that song this morning.
I definitely put it on a playlist of mine, so I listen to it all the time. But Dr. Ghez is only the fourth woman to win the Nobel Prize in Physics, following Marie Curie in 1903, Maria Geppert Meyer in 1963, and Donna Strickland in 2018. So feminist, I totally burped there, sorry.
I didn't mean to.
The Nobel Prize in Chemistry was jointly awarded on a Wednesday to Emmanuel Charpentier and Jennifer A. Doudna for their 2012 work on CRISPR-Cas9, a method to edit DNA. The announcement marks the first time the award has gone to two women. So Dr. Charpentier and Dr. Doudna, only the sixth and seventh women in history to win a chemistry prize, period. It has only been 8 years since Dr. Doudna and Dr. Charpentier, now the director of Max Planck Unit for the Science of Pathogens in Berlin, co-authored their first paper demonstrating the power of the CRISPR-9, which is a method to turn molecules made by microbes into a tool for customizing genes. Since then, the technology has exploded. Doctors are testing it as a cure for genetic disorders such as sickle cell disease and hereditary blindness. Plant scientists are using it to create new crops, and some researchers are even trying to use CRISPR to bring species back from extinction.
Ooh.
Question, however, how do we feel about genome editing?
It is funny because this article talks about all of it,
mm-hmm.
the good and the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if you could call it, but this is, okay, here's what, so the idea of being able to edit genes to, you know, get out the bad stuff and, you know, that is great. That's great. But little stuff like this, when it says we can bring animals back from extinction.
Yeah.
Hold on. Wait a minute. That is like one of the many dangerous things that
we've all seen Jurassic Park.
Right? I've seen a bunch of sequels of Jurassic Park.
Exactly.
And it's like, they keep trying to do it right. Let's bring the dinosaurs back right. But something always happens. I think that you mess with genes too much. You try to play God too much. Something crazy happens. But don't get me wrong. I'm not totally against it, thumping against it. I think there needs to be a lot of oversight.
Definitely.
And, yeah, because I'm pro-science for show, you know?
Yeah. I think there is a line that is very, very thin that if we cross it, we can definitely play God a little too much.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to bring your puppy back, that's cool, right? But you know, but don't go bringing a T-Rex back. So, well, there's something in the genes here. So, brownies, we all love them. Some of us love them more than others. But so apparently, according to an article that just came out this week, it is better or easier to find brownies than tomatoes. So the human brain is hardwired to map our surroundings. This trait is called spatial memory. And our ability to remember certain locations, where objects are in relation one to another. So new findings published today in Scientific Reports suggest that one feature of our spatial recall is efficiently locating, get this, high-calorie, energy-rich food.
Whoa.
Yeah, like brownies.
Grrr. Yeah.
I don't know why I did the grrr for brownies, but the study's authors believe that human spatial memory ensured that our hunter-gatherer ancestors could prioritize the location of reliable nutrition, giving them an evolutionary leg up. The main takeaway from the message is that human minds seem to be designed for efficiently locating high-calorie foods in our environment. Those with a better memory of for where they are, these high-calorie foods would be more likely to survive. The survival of the fittest. So one drawback of our spatial skills as they relate to sustenance is our modern taste for junk food. Chronic disease such as diabetes, was not, those weren't concerns for our ancestors. If you came across a rich grove of fruit trees, you consumed all the sugar you could, it would help ensure your survival, you were good, you know. But now a taste for sweets and fats contributes to a global obesity epidemic. I'm thinking of the pandemic going on. and it also has us reaching for candy over kale. That would be a great band name, Candy Over Kale.
That is a great band name.
Yes, let's do that. I want you guys to start a band and give us props.
Yes.
But we're more likely to remember sweet things. Whoa, sweet thing. Which was a real plus for most of our evolutionary history. But it's problematic in today's world. We're still walking around with Stone Age brains. Can we use this CRISPR technology to give us new brains?
Right.
Give me an upgrade, baby.
Let's upgrade that one. We don't need that one. Yeah. However, what is your favorite candy bar?
Oh, I was reading. So there was a thing on Facebook today, and it said if you could only have these candy bars, it included Reese's peanut butter cups. I don't know why it included that in this survey.
They're not really a bar, are they?
They're not a bar. So I said it would be Reese's. If so, you're going to look at me crazy. They had Snickers in this. And they had, Almond Joy and Mounds. And they had Kit Kat. I would say Almond Joy or Mounds, you know? I love the chocolate. I love the coconut. I'm a little bit weird, right?
I'm probably weirder. 100 grand.
That, for some reason, does not surprise me. But then again, you like, you eat black jelly beans.
I do.
And the white jelly beans. Oh.
Black licorice. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Wow.
So this was a really cool article that I found. So we've all heard of David Bowie.
Yeah. R.I.P.
The Starman has been flying over Mars. The territory around Mars has been infinitely cooler as SpaceX's Starman, the spacesuit-sporting mannequin behind the wheel of Elon Musk's solar system-traveling Tesla Roadster, has made its first intimate flyby of the red planet this week, coming within 5 million miles of the ruddy-colored surface.
Ooh.
Starman's Tesla was secured to the second stage of the Falcon Heavy rocket when it first blasted off from the Kennedy Space Center's historic pad 39A over 2 years ago to deafening cheers and applause. Now the artificial motorist appears confidently in control as his four-wheeled spaceship swings around our neighboring planet, an important event in its odd odyssey. Mars would appear about one-tenth of the diameter of the moon, so small but not to a point. It will pass about 5 million kilometers from Earth in the year 2047, not close enough to see it as a resolved object. According to the official website's whereisroadster.com, the interplanetary vehicle has completed 1.7507 orbits around the sun since being launched back in February 2018 on the premier flight of SpaceX's thundering Falcon Heavy rocket. Musk's intrepid $100,000 car is currently more than 37 million miles from Earth and has ventured almost 1.3 billion miles since leaving our world. It will remain on a looping trajectory around the sun between Earth and Mars for the next hundreds of millions of years, with only a 6% chance of crashing back to Earth. Comforting calculations indeed. This just makes me realize, ground control to Major Tom. Just imagine like that song playing on a loop, like on that dashboard, you know.
Oh my God! Is there life on Mars?
I don't know.
We'll find out.
Did you see this picture though?
I did, and I'm looking at.
They're super cool.
Yeah, but the fact that there's actually a Tesla in space.
There's a Tesla car in space with a mannequin driving it.
It's just
in orbit.
They don't even need the mannequin because these are self-driving cars, but whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
It's crazy, and it's great, and it's grand, like a 100 grand bar.
Exactly.
So, there's news out of Louisiana. You would think it's out of Florida, but it's out of Louisiana. We love our Florida listeners. So, Louisiana Archbishop blasts demonic sex act in church and orders that altars be removed and burned. So, this is what happens. The Archbishop of a New Orleans church on Friday called the report of an alleged sex act between a priest and two women inside a church. And he called this thing, he called the act demonic and ordered that the altar be removed. Oh, yeah, this is the, you, just when you thought church was boring. So a witness called the police after seeing Clark, who was one of the reverends, through a window of the St. Peter's and Paul Roman Church in the state or the parish of the state of Louisiana. And he said that the priest was seeing with two high-heeled, corseted women.
Ooh.
Yes, they were classy.
Hot bitches.
You right? Hot. While he was partially dressed in priestly attire. So he was kind of in a priest robe, kind of not. The witness had become suspicious of because the church lights were on late at night. I thought Catholic churches, you could be there like at any time, but
who knows?
I'm not sure. Well, the witness recorded the incident and showed it to police. I wonder, did he keep it?
Do you think he kept it?
He recorded. Now,
oh,
that's,
my God. I want to see that video.
Well, you know what? Now I kind of do, too, and I don't know why. But the three were later arrested on obscenity charges for having sex within the view of the public because the altar can be seen through windows and glass doors. Can I pause for a second here?
Yeah, totally.
This goes back to the conversation you and I had about how people think I'm a weirdo for this. I would never like to have open windows in a house.
Just for this exact reason.
Yes, for this exact. And people are always like, "Oh, no one's ever looking in." Blah blah blah. You know, I mean, not that I think that it's, you know, cool to be, you know, to have, you know,
to having a threesome on an altar in a Catholic church.
Right, right. Where people could walk by and see. But that's my thing. This would never happen because my windows, my blinds are open now because you're here.
Yeah.
But you made me do that. It's anyhow. I just don't get it. Like. But who knows? Sometimes people don't like. Some people like the thrill. You know?
Some these guys apparently do.
They like the thrills. The fact that it involved a priest or took place in a church is completely irrelevant, the attorney said. Attorney Bradley Phillips, according to the New Orleans Advocate, he represents the two women, Mindy Dixon and Melissa Chang, who were accused of having sex with Reverend Travis Clark in Pearl River. Northwest of New Orleans. Now, he said, I understand that people may be upset by this situation, but it does not make this conduct illegal or criminal in any way. That might be true, but the head priest in charge apparently says it's demonic.
Yes.
I don't know if does demonic trump illegal and criminal?
You know, the only way I would say that it was demonic is if you actually caught the demon on camera.
Right. Eating popcorn. Yeah.
If a tree falls in a woods, does it make a sound?
Right. And I think, you know, and none of us...
Where is the demon?
Seriously. And he's the one going around recording it. Isn't it illegal to record people? I don't know whose
side. People having sex, I know.
Right. Whose side are we on?
You know what? This was a Fox News article, so we're going to go on the sex. We're sex positive here, too. So.
Yes, yes. We are.
Even though
I'm not getting any, but we're like...
The only issue is that they got caught.
Right? If you do it well. And
I mean, hell,
caught.
That reverend was having a good old time with Mindy and Melissa.
Right. And one of the women, I love this, he was 37. One of the women was 41. One of them was 23. Yeah. Wow. Go Rev.
Go Rev.
Yeah. But is it a reverend? Because I thought it was a Catholic church. I'm not even sure.
Who knows?
Yeah.
Fox News. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be talking about some sextrology for our Patreon listeners. And we're going to talk about the Four Agreements with Jay's Cosmic Insights.
We are.
Cosmic insights this week.
I have some insights of the cosmic variety. So I usually, you know, do my own thing every week, and I was thinking about what to talk about, and what kept popping into my head is something that I haven't I hadn't looked at for a long time, which was called the Four Agreements. Have you ever heard of this?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know what they are, but yes,
okay.
I've
well,
heard of them.
There's a guy named Don Miguel Ruiz, and he looks at, he's a, you know, a thought leader, and he, you know, has written books, and he wrote the Four Agreements. This book is actually used by some ethics professors and judges, but the book is ancient wisdom taken from the Toltecs and some, you know, older older, you know, groups, you know, even that predate the Aztecs.
I think they teach it in Buddhism to a certain extent too, and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's taken some old, you know, wisdom and made it practical. So there are four agreements, and this is what we mean by agreements. The whole premise is that we have wittingly or unwittingly made agreements to ourselves, to the world, what we're going to be about, what we're going to be like, what makes us upset, what doesn't make us upset, how much we're going to take, what we aren't going to take, what our deal breakers are. So we make agreements all the time with ourselves and with the world about us. And what the Four Agreements, this book, asks us to do is to make four new agreements, right? Whether you want to call them agreements, promises, things that I'm going to do for myself that are powerful. So in his book, he came out with a fifth agreement. But we're not going to talk about that now. We'll talk about it later. But in the original book, the Four Agreements, the first one is be impeccable with your word. So this is one that we talk about a lot on this show, about the power of what you say and what you do. Now, impeccable, of course, you know, perfect, without blemish, without spot. So that's what you want to be with your word. And when it says with your word, that's the idea of, number one, of course, what I say. So the idea is that, we'll talk about self-talk first, that even, you know, my thoughts are the words of my brain, right? So that's what I say. So I have to be careful what I say to myself. And this first agreement is that I have to agree to the words that I speak, the thoughts that I think. I need those to be clear, that I can't have negative self-talk or negative talk in general. He talks about, in this book, talks about being impeccable with your word. He says that words are like magic, and that to, when we use our word for good, that is what he calls good magic or white magic. This part made me mad, but he called it black magic when you talked about the black magicians when you use your word for poison. But the idea, the understanding of the idea is great, because if words are magic, then we can be magicians for good or evil with our words. If good and evil, you know, are, you know, words that you don't like, for the betterment of society or for the enworcerment. I realize that
go with
enworcerment isn't, you know, yes it is. We're gonna make it a word here.
We're gonna make it a word.
But it talks about like little things like agreements that I have to make with myself. Am I gossiping about other people? Is that something I'm using my word for? Because if that is, what I'm doing is I'm sending poison out in the universe.
Yep.
Am I talking about how things aren't fair and complaining all the time? If I'm doing that, I'm using my words and being a magician. I'm practicing the bad magic. What am I talking about? Am I building people up? Am I saying things that are loving and kind? And I have to realize, it's so funny, we were in the grocery store earlier today, and I caught myself in the middle of talking, because we were talking about age, and I'm a good decade older than Demi. And we were talking, you know, I started thinking, well, when you get my age, blah, blah, blah. I started pulling that card. And then I caught myself in the middle of starting to call myself old, which I'm not. I'm totally a zaddy.
Yeah, you are.
And I'm getting into that. Not a daddy, but I'm definitely a zaddy.
Yep.
But at any rate, and I caught myself because I would realize, whoa, I was about to call myself old. Why would I bring that sort of energy into me? So the first agreement is to be impeccable with your word, that what comes out of my mouth, what I say, even what I think, has to be as pure as what I want my life to be. So I love that the fact that there's a what's called the monistic view of society, of the world, that says that everything that, you know, my hands, the lamp, the table, these microphones, that, you know, the sun, the moon, that everything started off as one substance, and that thought made that one substance into the matter that it is right now. That somehow thought alone, even if you look at the table right here, it started off as a thought in someone's mind, and people decided, okay, we're going to make this table, blah, blah. So by what I think and what I say, thoughts become things.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole idea is be impeccable with your word. I think I drive this one home every week. So be impeccable with your word, meaning don't put anything out there, a thought or a word out there, that is going to be damaging to you or to anyone else. Because you can send poison with your words.
Yeah.
But the second one, never take anything personally. The second agreement. Wait, hold it. Wait a minute. What do you mean? Now, it's funny that I love the accountability that's here,
mm-hmm.
because he you know, says in this that, okay, be impeccable with your word. Use your word for great stuff. Don't send poison to anybody else. But even if somebody sends poison to you with their words, don't take it personally.
Yep.
I think that is, you know, genius advice, because
laugh it off is the easiest way to do it for me.
Yeah?
Just make fun of it in your mind. You're like, nah, yeah. Or even say like, oh, that's just my sister. She's having a bad day or something. You know, kind of like roll it off your back. Water off a duck's back.
Right. And what happens is that, you know, we don't, you know, when you take things personally, you agree. It's almost like you're agreeing with what that person is saying.
Yep.
If someone comes up to you, walks down the street and says, you know, that's a dumb shirt. That's a dumb, I don't like that dumb look you have, you know, and I get upset and I get mad. Then why would I get upset or mad? Do I agree with them? And what I do in my mind, oh, maybe my shirt does look dumb. Maybe my, you know, this is happening. And the idea is that when I take something personally, I realize when people say things about me, doesn't tell me about me, it tells me about them.
Yep.
That we don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. So what happens is we have to learn. It's funny, this week, I'm going to bust myself here as I often do. I was having just a stressful day a couple of days ago. I was, you know, working on this new job, and I was this tech stuff, which I, you know, say I'm good at. You know, this tech stuff wasn't working. I'm all pissed off. I'm mad. One of my friends who I hadn't talked to in a while, I ended up texting, and, you know, at the beginning of the day, then at the end of the day, you know, it was some stuff we had to go over, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent, you know, I was, like, upset, and I was like, you know, just a simple text back, even that I can't talk, would be helpful right now. And I was a little bit of a brat. And then I realized, the friend called me back, and we talked, hey, are you okay, blah, blah, blah. But I realized that this friend, at one point, had told me, hey, if you ever can't get me, call me, because texting, I get overwhelmed with texting. But the reason I tell this story is because I took the fact that someone didn't text me back when I was in this frazzled state because I was worried about things. I took that so personally.
Yeah.
And I realized how much of our lives, things happen that have nothing to do with us, but have everything to do with that other person. Whether it's that they're being a jerk, or whether it's that they have other stuff on their mind, or whatever. And we take things personally. And what happens is, not taking things personally, this is what it does. It takes somebody else's view of me and makes it less important than my own view of myself.
Yeah.
Whether it's positive or negative, even if somebody, if I live off of just other people's positive views of me, then when those positive views disappear, I can't take what you say. If I can't use you as a barometer of how I'm going to feel about myself. Do you know Cat Williams?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know what I'm going to say here, but he talks about how people have this thing about, you messed up my self-esteem. And it's like, what? It's called self-esteem. It's esteem of yourself. How am I going to feel? How am I going to mess up how you feel about you, simple bitch? But it's true that...
That's perfect.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes we take things so personally, and we tell people things like, you made me feel blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And one thing that's helped me so much recently is realizing that I can't personalize everything that other folks do, and that someone can't make me feel bad.
Exactly.
I feel bad about situations based upon what's gone on in my life, what's happened, you know, but not personalizing things also. This is a big part of it is, we walk around a lot of times, like, I'm the star of this show, you know, people are supporting characters, but it's all about me, all about me, all about me.
Mm-hmm.
And people's, it's so funny, I realized that I was jogging, and I mention jogging all the time, the other day, and it seemed like someone just got in front of me for no, like, why would you stand right there in the middle of the sidewalk so I have to run into this, almost into this puddle, and, yeah. And then I realized, you know, I was going to get upset about that, and then I realized, you know what, I can just go around, and I went around, and it wasn't a big thing, but I thought about how many times in life, little stuff like that, like somebody just standing there, I personalized because somebody was in a way, or I thought someone was being selfish. But so, you know, not taking things personally. And this is, I'm going to say this one last thing about this, that it frees me of having to be upset about certain things, because certain times I can stay mad at somebody because, oh no, they don't know what they did to me. And I stay mad and I like collect the anger and I stay with it. But when I agree that I'm not going to take something personally, it's not going to upset me. So that is something that's been beneficial. Number three, agreement three. So we have be impeccable with your word is the first one. The second one, don't take anything personally. Number three, don't make assumptions. Ooh.
Yep.
Samuel L. Jackson said it best when he said, when you make an assumption, you make an ass out of you. An umption. Samuel L. Jackson would never say you make an ass out of me. He would just never say that. But it's, you know, making assumptions, what we need to do is communicate clearly with other people so we can let go of misunderstandings. This is what happens when we assume. When we assume, we take, you know, ask yourself what an assumption is. I mean, we have powerful imaginations, like really powerful. So what happens is we don't know the answer to something.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is we imagine or give ourselves an answer in our head that may or may not be true. And then we listen to what's going on in our head. Our imagination starts going, what other people are doing, what they're thinking, what they're saying about us. We dream up little things in our imagination. The subconscious mind views all of that, what we're dreaming up, as pure fact. And all of a sudden, I'm basing my life or basing my decisions on assumptions or things that haven't even happened yet, or things that may never happen. So it's, you know, making assumptions and taking them personally is the beginning of a lot of trouble. You know, assumptions are no more than like lies that we're telling ourselves. And they create, you know, creates a huge, huge drama for nothing. I've assumed that people were, I mean, have you ever made crazy assumptions and then found that, oh, I'm dead wrong?
Like, yeah, like most days of my life, I would say I've made some weird assumption that just made absolutely zero sense in hindsight, but I was just fully into it, like, when it happened.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's funny because I hear people say things a lot of times like, oh, you know what? Well, she just thinks she thinks she's smart, or he thinks, you know, he's cool, or he thinks, you know, he's hot, or this. I've heard these sort of things,
mm-hmm.
And it's funny. I'm like, why? How would you know what somebody else is?
Are you in this person's head? Yeah.
Exactly. And this is what happens. What assumptions do, they take my preconceived notions about someone else, something else about a situation, and they cut me off from learning anything because I take my world, and see, I'm in my world, you're, I know we're all in the world, but I'm in a world of mine, you're in a world of yours, and everybody has their own set of thoughts.
It's
and what's
insulation.
Yeah, yeah. And when we make assumptions, we also tell ourselves, I don't need to learn anymore. I don't need to, I have all the information here, and we cut ourselves off from what the truth can be. So I'm trying myself not to make, and this is,
it's I caught you earlier.
When? Oh, I'm scared.
No, when you were talking about this, you're like, I don't know how I'm going to make anything about like assumptions. I'm like, are you assuming that you won't know that you won't make assumptions?
Yes, I forgot. You did. You did mm-hmm. get me earlier. People, you know, in relationships, I'll say this, in friendships and relationships, people make assumptions all the time.
Yeah.
Like we talked about before in the taking things personally, why someone isn't texting back right away.
Yeah.
Why, you know, it's so funny. Sometimes people get in relationships and people assume you should know me better. You should be able to do this. It's funny because people in relationships mean different things to different people. Marriages mean different things to different people. And certain times people have so much conflict in relationships of all kinds, romantic and platonic, because instead of asking questions, we assume. I think we're in a culture sometimes that says that you should know the right answer, that you don't have to ask, you know? You should just know. You should know what I like. You should know what to do. I'm mad. Well, if you don't know, I'm not going to tell you.
And that's like, crazy.
It is crazy talk, right? And it, as crazy as it is, I think when other people do it, it's just so crazy. And sometimes when I'm in the, you know, assumption chair, I somehow, the feelings get there and I somehow justify it. Mm-hmm. So what this agreement asks us to do is not to make assumptions, not to live our lives off of what I think in my head. If, you know, I'll say this, if not taking things personally is insulation against other people's thoughts of us and actions toward us, not assuming is insulation against me in my head. The ancient Mayans and Toltecs and all these folks, Aztecs rather, and Toltecs had the term called the matote. The matote is the committee in one's head. And does it make
committee?
Sense? Oh, you never heard this before. There's certain people that know what that whole thing is. So what happens is, all the voices in one's head, not audible voices, but, oh, you ought to do this, you shouldn't have done that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the committee starts going in one's head sometimes.
Okay.
And the committee says...
The peanut gallery.
Yes, the peanut gallery.
Let's not hear from the peanut gallery.
Yes, or the matote.
Yeah.
But the peanut gallery in one's head. So all of a sudden, they're saying, you know, this is what's going on, blah, blah, blah. You don't have to ask them because you know. And if you ask, they're going to lie anyhow, blah, blah. So... That happens, but when we, you know, sometimes it's hard and embarrassing to ask a question, but we get to the bottom of it when we ask and we, you know, don't make assumptions. You know, we can focus our attention on the truth rather than what we think is the truth. So, there's one more. So, the first one is be impeccable with your word. Second one, don't take anything personally. Number three, don't make assumptions. And number four, always do your best.
Mm-hmm.
Now, always do your best might seem like, well, duh, you should always do your best. But do we really? Now, this agreement is an agreement to not do more or less than our best. Now, it's funny because I don't know if you've ever done this. I've had times when I knew I wasn't, like, I just tried to overextend myself. And then, after overextending myself, I was like, well, I gave it my best, so I'm not going to do anything else. And I do less.
Yep.
But always do your best. This is big for me, too. I think it's big for anybody who's working from home. Because this is the deal. You ever had that experience when you're at work and your boss goes away? And all of a sudden, like, when the cat's away, the mice will play.
Yeah.
That whole thing, right? So what happens is that I have made an agreement in my mind. My old agreement in my mind is that I'm going to do my best as long as somebody's sitting there watching.
Yeah.
And as long as I'm there accountable.
Yep.
But when I don't have to do my best, I'm going to do a little bit less. And that has been a little bit crazy for me. It's weird working at home because there's no boss mm-hmm. standing over me. So what do I do? I started researching a little bit about the human brain, and of course there's the, you know, the forebrain, you know, in the beginning, that brain that sees everything, takes everything in. There's the brain that develops context, develops things and ideas. And there's the back of the brain, that lizard brain. And this is what happens. The reason I think, you know, doing your best, what stops us from doing our best a lot of times is that lizard brain.
Yeah.
So that lizard reptilian brain, its purpose is to keep us safe. And what happens is, when I start to do something that I perceive, the reason it's there is because, oh, you don't want to jump off of that cliff it brings fear, because that fear can save you. Fear, in a certain sense, that reptilian brain goes off.
In a hunter-gatherer sense, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, danger's coming. Let's avoid that. Hey, I don't want to jump off this cliff because I could die. You know, I don't want to do this. And that helped us. Like we talked about as, you know, as humans, you know, as cavemen, that helped us. But here's what happens. Now it's hard to do our best sometimes, because when I'm about to make a call for work, what the lizard brain says is, you don't want to make the call. You know what? They could say something mean to you. They could not take this. They could not do this. Why don't you play, why don't you watch Netflix for a little bit? Why don't you chill? Why don't you sit on the couch? Why don't you do that? And all of a sudden, I'm not doing my best. I'm saying I'm doing my best. But the reason I'm thinking I'm doing my best is because that reptilian brain is there protecting, or thinking, I'm thinking it's protecting me. Yeah. But what happens is, and this is a trick to learn how to do my best that I've learned from a couple of people, is to not dance around it, but to acknowledge that reptilian brain. Be like, hey, thank you for trying to protect me. Thank you, I appreciate it, but I got this now. And, you know, doing our best, you know, it's so funny because there's a story that I remembered. It's a story of a guy named R.U. Darby and his uncle. Darby, you'll probably know him as a big insurance guy from...
I don't know, R.U. Darby?
R.U. Darby. But back in the days of the gold rush, there's a man, he was R.U. Darby's uncle. They went to California and they got all this mining equipment in Colorado, actually. So they got all this mining equipment. And they were like, we're going to, you know, beat this gold rush thing and we're going to make all our money. And they bought all this expensive equipment. Bought all this equipment here. And they were drilling and drilling and trying to, you know, digging for gold. And they couldn't find it. All this time, they were like, they spent all this money going into this, and they couldn't find it. So they got pissed off and depressed, and what they did was they decided to walk away from the whole thing. They sold their equipment for whatever they could get it for to try to at least let's recoup some of our losses. And they sold a lot of the equipment to a junk man who bought their machinery for a couple of $100s. And they went back. These folks went back to Maryland. But the junk man who they sold it to, he decided to hire a mine engineer or a specialist to look over the land and survey the land. And what he found was there was gold. They didn't know about fault lines back then.
What?
So there was there was gold in this area. It was just they were drilling a few feet away and digging a few feet away. And this guy, they struck, you know, they found gold, and it was just like one of the biggest discoveries. But this whole story, you know, tells us sometimes that sometimes we can dance around it. We can, you know, oh, I'm just going to do this all myself. I'm going to. But what this, what the junk man who they sold it to did was he cared enough about this to survey the land to see what's going on here. Like, what is, he did his best. And we can miss that when we, you know, drill just a few feet away from gold. You know, we can miss out on just so much in our lifetime. But I encourage everybody, you know, for me, I'll say this before I wrap it up, is that I remember even with, we were talking about this, that I hit a strong point with my jogging, and then I feel like, I don't want to do anything. I can't do anything. And there's certain days that I can't do 6, 7, 8 miles. And I really, my body will not let me do it. But what I need to do, and I've started to do, is do my best. I can jog 1 or 2 or 3.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, I mean, that's the four agreements that I keep forgetting his name, Don Miguel. I always want to say Don Michael. Don Miguel Ruiz came up with, be impeccable with your word, never take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and always do your best.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
I love that. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. We're going to take another quick break, and we are going to discuss some witches.
Witches.
Happy Halloween, bitches.
Woo!
Hi, Demi. It's Aunt Sylvia. I'm calling to say hello. Uncle Snappy's here, too. He sends his love. He's out mowing the lawn. I wanted to say, I heard about what you're talking about this week, and I just wanted to say, my sister Kathy, your Aunt Kathy, she was a witch, too. She had all those lotions and the potions around. She had a black cat. She never married. God knows what she was up to in there all the time. I just want to say, be careful. That's some dark-sided stuff. But I love you anyways. Have a good show. Bye.
Thanks, Demi's Aunt Sylvia.
Thanks, Aunt Sylvia.
Thank you. That was a hell of a send-in.
I know.
Well, we have a deep dive topic.
Splash.
Splash. And it is witches.
Witches.
I don't know why I keep saying witches. but let's talk about witches, baby. Images of witches have appeared in various forms throughout history, from evil, wart-nosed women huddling over a cauldron of boiling liquid to hag-faced, cackling beings riding through the sky on brooms, wearing ponytail hats. In pop culture, the witch has been portrayed as a benevolent, nose-twitching suburban housewife, an awkward teenager learning to control her powers, and a trio of charmed sisters battling the forces of evil. The real history of witches, however, is dark, and often for the witches themselves, quite deadly.
Mm. Etymology. The word is over 1,000 years old. Old English formed the compound wiccacraft, I guess that's how it's pronounced, from wicca, witch, and craft. The word witch is also spelled wicca, or W-Y-C-C-A, in Old English, and was originally masculine.
Mm.
Folk etymologies link witchcraft to the English words wit, wise, wisdom, and an Indo-European root weed, void, wid, so craft of the wise. In anthropological terminology, witches differ from sorcerers in that they don't use physical tools or actions to curse. Their maleficum is perceived as extending from the single some intangible inner quality. And one may be unaware of being a witch, or may have been convinced of their nature by the suggestion of others. This definition was pioneered in a study of Central African magical beliefs by E.E. Evans Pritchard, who cautioned that it might not correspond with normal English usage. Historians of European witchcraft have found that anthropological definition difficult to apply to European witchcraft, where witches could usually use or be accused of using physical techniques, as well as some who really have attempted to cause harm by thought alone. European witchcraft is seen by historians and anthropologists as an ideology. I cannot read right now.
I can't read!
Ideology for explaining misfortune. However, this ideology has manifested in diverse ways, as described below.
Below, the origin of witches. Early witches were people who practiced witchcraft, using magic, spells, and calling upon spirits for help to bring about change. Most witches were thought to be pagans doing the devil's work. However, many were simply natural healers or so-called wise women, whose choice of a profession was misunderstood. It's unclear exactly when witches came on the historical scene, but one of the earliest records is a witch in the Bible in the book of 1 Samuel, thought to be written between 931 BC and 721 BC. It tells a story of when King Saul sought the witch of Endor to summon the dead prophet Samuel's spirit to help him defeat the Philistine army. The witch riled Samuel, who then prophesied the death of Saul and his sons. The next day, according to the Bible, Saul's sons died in battle, and Saul committed suicide.
He fell on his sword.
Yeah.
Oh.
I remember that. Yeah.
You're a preacher. You know this.
Yes. That's what they said. The men fell on their swords. It means they went... another Old Testament verse... Other Old Testament verses condemn witches, such as the oft-cited Exodus 22:18, which says, "Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live." additional, I don't know why I thought that was additional barbecue. I'm hungry. Sure, I'm hungry. Additional biblical passages caution against divination, chanting, or using witches to contact the dead.
Malleus Maleficarum. Witch hysteria really took hold in Europe during the mid-1400s when many accused witches confessed, often under torture, to a variety of wicked behaviors. Within a century, witch hunts were common, and most of the accused were executed by burning at the stake or hanging. Single women, widows, or other women on the margin of society were especially targeted. Between the years 1500 and 1660, up to 80,000 suspected witches were put to death in Europe. Around 80% of them were women, thought to be in cahoots with the devil and filled with lust. I mean, sign me up. Put me to death, I'm ready. Germany had the highest witchcraft execution rate, while Ireland had the lowest. The publication of Malleus Maleficarum, written by two well-respected German Dominicans in 1486, likely spurred witch mania to go viral. The book, which usually translated as The Hammer of Witches, was essentially a guide on how to identify, hunt, and interrogate witches. Malleus Maleficarum labeled witchcraft as heresy and quickly became the authority for Protestants and Catholics trying to flush out witches living among them. For more than 100 years, the book sold more copies than any other book in Europe except the Bible.
Wow. The Salem Witch Trials. I have a song called Bobby from Salem. They're from Salem.
We should play it at the end of the song.
Right? We're going to play that one day. Salem Witch Trials. As witch hysteria decreased in Europe, it grew in the... where was it? Let's try this again. Salem Witch Trials. As witch hysteria decreased in Europe, it grew in the New World, which was reeling from wars between the French and British, a smallpox epidemic, and ongoing fear of attacks from neighboring Native American tribes. The tense atmosphere was ripe for finding scapegoats. Probably the best-known witch trials took place in Salem, Massachusetts in 1692. The Salem witch trials began when a 9-year-old Elizabeth Paris and 11-year-old Abigail Williams began suffering from fits, body contortions, and uncontrolled screaming. Today it's believed that they were poisoned by a fungus that caused spasms and delusions. As more young women began to exhibit symptoms, mass hysteria ensued, and three women were accused of witchcraft. Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba, an enslaved woman... Tituba, an enslaved woman owned by Paris's father. Tituba confessed to being a witch and began accusing others of using black magic. On June 10th, Bridget Bishop became the first accused witch to be put to death during the Salem witch trials when she was hanged at the Salem gallows. Ultimately, around 150 people were accused and 18 were put to death. Women weren't the only victims of the Salem witch trials. 6 men were also convicted and executed. Massachusetts wasn't the first of the 13 colonies to obsess about witches, though. In Windsor, Connecticut, in 1647, Ale Young was the first person in America to be executed for witchcraft. Before Connecticut's final witch trials took place in 1697, 46 people were accused of witchcraft in that state, and 11 were put to death for the crime. In Virginia, people were less than frantic about witches. In fact, Lower Norfolk County in 1655, a law was passed making it a crime to falsely accuse someone of witchcraft. Still, witchcraft was a concern. About 2 dozen witch trials, mostly women, took place in Virginia between 1626 and 1730. None of the accused were executed.
Are witches real? One of the most famous witches in Virginia's history is Grace Sherwood, whose neighbor has alleged that she killed her pigs and hexed their cotton. Other accusations followed, and Sherwood was brought to trial in 1706. The court decided to use a controversial water test to determine her guilt or innocence. Sherwood's arms and legs were bound as she and she was thrown into a body of water. If she sank, she was innocent. If she floated, she was guilty. Sherwood didn't sink, and she was convicted of being a witch. She wasn't killed, but was put in prison for 8 years. A satirical article, supposedly written by Benjamin Franklin, about a witch trial in New Jersey, was published in 1730 in the Pennsylvania Gazette. It brought to light the ridiculousness of some witchcraft accusations. It wasn't long before witch mania died down in the New World, and laws were passed to help protect people from being wrongly accused and convicted.
Witch mania. Book of Shadows. Well, wasn't that in Charmed?
Speaking of Charmed, I live right by the Charmed house.
You were saying?
Yeah.
That is kind of cool.
Yeah, I took a picture of it the other day. Well, not the other day, a couple weeks ago.
I am human, and I just need to be loved. Just like your morning health does. Book of Shadows. Modern-day witches of the Western world still struggle to shake their historical stereotype. Most practice Wicca, an official religion in the United States and Canada. Wiccans avoid evil and the appearance of evil at all costs. Their motto is harm no one, and they strive to live a peaceful, tolerant, and balanced life in tune with nature and humanity. Modern-day witches still perform witchcraft, but there is seldom anything sinister about it. Their spells and incantations are often derived from their Book of Shadows, a 20th-century collection of wisdom and witchcraft, and can be compared to the act of prayer in other religions. A modern-day witchcraft potion is more likely to be an herbal remedy for the flu instead of a hex to harm someone.
Spellcasting. Probably the most widely known characteristic of a witch is the ability to cast a spell. Spell being the word used to signify the means employed to carry out a magical action. A spell could consist of a set of words, a formula or verse, or a ritual action, or any combination of these. Like you said earlier, words have magic.
Mm.
Or words have power, I think that's what you said earlier.
Yeah, or magic and power.
Both. Spells traditionally were cast by many methods, such as by the inscription of runes or sigils on an object that gave that magical object, or gave the object magical powers, by the immolation or binding of a wax or clay image, a poppet, or of a person to affect them magically, or by the recitation of incantations, by the performance of physical rituals, by the employment of magical herbs as amulets or potions, by gazing at mirrors, swords, and other specula, scrying, for purposes of divination and many other means. Witchcraft is a practice of magical skills, spells, and abilities. Witchcraft is a broad term that varies culturally in society and thus can be difficult to define with precision. Historically, and currently in most traditional cultures worldwide, notably in Asia, South America, Africa, and the African diaspora, and indigenous communities of the Americas, the term is commonly associated with those who use supernatural means to cause harm to the innocent. In fact, such as the Philippines, witches are viewed as those opposed to the sacred indigenous religions. In contrast, anthropologists writing about healers in indigenous communities either use the traditional terminology of these cultures or broad anthropological terms like shaman. In the modern era, some use witch to refer to benign, positive, or neutral practices of modern paganism, such as divination or spellcraft, but this is primarily a modern Western popular culture phenomenon. Today's witchcraft spells are usually used to stop someone from doing evil or harming themselves. Ironically, while it's probable that some historical witches use witchcraft for evil purposes, many have embraced it for healing and protection against the immorality that they were accused of. But witches, whether actual or accused, still face persecution and death. Several men and women suspected of using witchcraft have been beaten and killed in Papua New Guinea since 2010, including a mother who was burned alive. Similar episodes of violence against people accused of being witches have occurred in Africa, South America, and the Middle East, and in immigration communities in Europe and the United States.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, me either.
White witches.
Why they gotta be white witches?
How come ain't no black witches, huh? Ain't no blitches.
Blitches.
I'm ridiculous. White witches. A painting in the Rila Monastery in Bulgaria condemning witchcraft and traditional folk magic. Throughout the early modern period in England, the English term witch was usually negative in meaning unless modified in some way to distinguish it from cunning folk. Alan MacFarlane
writes, there were a number of interchangeable terms for these practitioners: white, good, or unbinding witches, blessers, wizards, sorcerers. However, cunning man and wise man were the most frequent. In 1584, Englishman and member of the Parliament Reginald Scott wrote, "At this day, it is indifferent to say in the English tongue, she is a witch or she is a wise woman." Folk magicians throughout the throughout Europe were often viewed ambivalently by communities and were considered as capable of harming as of healing, which could lead to their being accused as witches in the negative sense. Many English witches convicted of consorting with demons may have been cunning folks whose fairy families had been demonized. Many French divine healers were accused of witchcraft, and over half of the accused witches in Hungary seem to have been healers. Some of those who described themselves as contacting fairies described out-of-body experiences and traveling through the realms of the other world or another world.
Witchcraft, feminism, and media. Wicca and neo-Wiccan literature has been described as aiding the empowerment of young women through its lively portrayal of female protagonists. Part of the recent growth in neo-pagan religions has been attributed to the strong media presence of fictional works such as Charmed, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and the Harry Potter series, with their depictions of pop culture positive witchcraft, which differs from the historical, traditional, and indigenous definitions. Based on the mass media case study done, Mass Media and Religious Identity, a Case Study of Young Witches, in the result that the case study was stated the reasons many young people are choosing to self-identify as witches and belong to groups that they define as practicing witchcraft is diverse. However, the use of pop culture witchcraft in various media platforms can be the spark of interest for young people to see themselves as witches. Widespread accessibility to related material through internet media such as chat rooms and forums is also thought to be driving this development, which is dependent on one's accessibility to those media resources and material to influence their thoughts and views on religion. Wiccan beliefs or pop culture variations thereof are often considered by adherents to be compatible with liberal ideals such as the Green Movement, and particularly with some varieties of feminism. By providing young women with what they see as a means for self-empowerment, control of their own lives, and potentially a way of influencing the world around them. This is the case particularly in North America due to the strong presence of feminist ideals in some branches of the neo-pagan communities. The 2002 study Enchanted Feminism, The Reclaiming Witches of San Francisco, suggests that some branches of Wicca include influential members of the second wave of feminism, which has also been redefined as a religious movement.
Overall, the history of witches is one that is tainted in mystery as well as horror. From the accusations of witchcraft in order to control or enforce the status quo, or from the modern era where witches are widely seen as benevolent spellcasters who live with cats and plant herbs. The truth of the matter is that the popularity of witchcraft today is largely feminist in view and scope, speaking of power again into a once stifled expression of metaphysical beauty.
Have you ever met a real-life witch?
I am a real-life witch.
Oh! Are you like Samantha or Sabrina?
Samantha? Like, Bewitched?
Bewitched.
Oh.
Bewitched.
I mean, I used to love Bewitched. I used to love the Munsters. Sabrina, I watched her all the time. I used to see myself as Sabrina, like fully. I used to like just want her powers because all she would do is just point at things and just have it done.
Right.
So I would definitely say more Sabrina.
Wait. Oh, and I should you actually answer the question. I was gonna say series old 90s Sabrina or dark Sabrina right now.
Ooh, good question. Yeah. I love them both.
Yeah.
I mean,
so going, very different. Yeah.
So very different. I love the horror edge that the new one has, mm-hmm. for sure. But I mean, I just kind of like the benevolent kind of like just point at things and your room's clean or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
I used
yeah.
to love, I used to hate doing my room. So that was like my fantasy. It's just to point at my room and it would be clean.
Oh, yeah. I would give me some abs.
Apart from that, I do know a couple of friends that are practicing witches. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Do you know any real life witches?
I have met witches like Wiccans.
Yeah.
I've met a few. It's been a while. But this study has made me, you know, very curious about, like, looking into what it's all about.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
What is the best way to identify a witch? Do you throw her over a cliff to see if she flies, or throw her in a river to see if she floats?
You ask her. You ask her, is you a witch? Hey, girl, you a witch? You a witch?
You a witch?
Yeah. There's certain certain concerts you could go to. But I don't know how do you...
Certain guns, like, Veruca Salt.
Sarah McLachlan. Yeah.
Evanescence, I don't know.
And by the way, most of my writing, a lot of my writing from back in the day was from Sarah McLachlan. So she definitely helped my, but I'm saying they're, you know.
I feel like these are antiquated, and I threw these in as a joke, but how do you identify a witch? I would say, like, you know, I don't think you can really go by the way that, like, people usually think, like, oh, she has a cat, or she wears a lot of black and stuff like that, because, I mean, I know some witches that don't wear a lot of black and are kind of, like, out in the fields and living their lives and stuff. Actually, I have a friend who lives in New Orleans right now. She's like an herbal witch.
Oh, wow.
And so she practices like herbal healing and things like that. She's made a pretty good living at it from what I know.
Wow.
Her name's Tessa. She's amazing. But if you're listening, hi Tessa. But you can't really tell as far as, I mean, there's kind of like a hippie thing that you got a vibe that you can maybe pick up on, but I don't think you can really tell who's a witch and who's not.
I see that if you have to ask, you haven't met one.
Exactly. Ooh. Exactly.
Ooh, yes. What about you? Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Depends on who you're asking.
Ooh. Yes. Bad witch is the only thing I like.
I'd say for the most part I'm a good witch, but get on my bad side. I'm a bad witch.
Oh.
Or if you throw me a little something, I'll be a bad witch for you.
Ooh. I want to be a bad witch for Halloween. I'm not going to lie. I just I want to be anything for Halloween at this point, to be able to go out.
You know what? I hope Halloween happens this year. I think it will.
Yeah.
I think we're coming to the point where Halloween is kind of like, all right, everyone's like, we've been pent up this entire time. We are ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope the coronavirus just ends, like, you know, today.
Yeah. This is a fun one. A witch placed a curse on you so that you are perpetually tongue-tied and can't speak. The only way to break this spell is to either cut out your tongue or eat Donald Trump's ass. What do you do?
Oh my god! Did you really? I hope he douches first.
He did not.
Oh no, come on. No, that's not in
you
the
You know
thing.
That man does not.
Oh, that's not in the...
He probably has a bidet in his gold-plated toilet, but...
Oh my god. I'm a writer and a singer. I need my tongue.
You know.
And one day I might like start having the sex again, and I might need my tongue. I might meet someone. All right. I might meet a very nice man.
Might want to eat someone else's ass,
or use it to kiss. You know.
Who does that?
Right. Oh my god. Oh my god.
Who kisses anymore?
That is
just jump straight in.
That is horrible.
What would you do?
I guess I'd have to be all up in there, because I just, like...
Come on, chump. We got this. Bend over.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen that naked picture of him?
Was this circulating years ago?
No, I think I just picked it up, like, this year.
Oh. Wait, is it a real naked picture of him?
I believe so.
Oh, I thought... Oh, wow.
It's, like, super grainy. You see his tiny little fucking elevator button dick, and... I think it was part of... I think it might have been leaked, like silently... Because not a whole lot of people were talking about it. And I think it might have been in that Russian doc that they were like...
Oh.
The P-tapes or whatever.
Oh.
It might have been part of that, but...
Mm.
I have it in my phone if you want to see it.
It's like a train wreck. I don't want to, but then part of me wants to.
It kind of is. Every time I look at it, I'm just kind of like, God, I'm glad I'm not him.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, do you want to do the quote?
I did the quote last. You do
it. I'll do it. Okay. This is a quote by Hermione Granger, of course. Fear of a name only increases the fear of the thing itself. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. One of the best witches ever. Let's face it.
Great witch.
Hermione Granger.
Let's see.
It was my turn, huh?
Wait, who did it last week?
I think you did.
I'm trying to remember now.
I think you did it last week.
I did, okay.
But that would be 3 weeks in a row, so I'll do it. Let's see. I am grateful for all of the synchronicities that I have been getting. They have been nonstop. I love when that happens because it just makes my mind race and I'm like, oh my god, what's next, you know, and like super excited. I'm grateful for my roommate. He's cool. We've literally been like hanging out every day and just like talking shit and having a good time together. I'm grateful for all this money that I'm gonna get.
Ooh, money.
Yes, and speaking in present tense. That
All
this money that I have.
Yes.
Thank you. All this money that I have right now.
Gotcha. I was about to ask you, where are we going? Red Lobster?
Where are we going? Red Lobster.
Right. I guess I keep forgetting that I don't eat meat anymore. All I could have is the cheese biscuits, you know, but hell.
You don't need anything else.
Right? Just fill up on those. What am I grateful for? I am grateful, I'm submitting music to certain places. Some of my songs, some of friend songs, and I heard back from one person. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to use this, but it was good that, you know, somebody even responded. So that's like the first step. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for when I was running today, I was jogging, and I tripped and I caught myself. I'm grateful that I didn't fall on my face because I fell last time that happened. So I'm grateful. So grateful for that. And I'm grateful that I didn't see this picture that you're talking about. I'm grateful that I did not see that.
I'm grateful for Noogie.
Aww.
Extra one. He's been super sweet. He's like, he literally does not leave my side. He's like an emotional support animal, but he needs emotional support himself. Right?
You're his emotional support human.
I'm his emotional support human. But I'm just grateful to have a little buddy that I can sleep with and snuggle with. He's sweet.
Aww.
Well, thank you for listening. You can follow us on social media, on Instagram, at A Cosmic Journey Pod. I am Dimitri Wild.
I am Jay Maceo. And follow me on Spotify as well.
Yes, yes. Stream Nelly. Stream Nelly.
Stream that, yeah.
More music will be coming out soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, within the next month, so we're very excited about that.
If you find value in this show, or if you want to listen to the Astrology 101 section, please subscribe to us on Patreon. It's entirely pick your own pricing. You can subscribe for $1 if you want, but there's extra content, ad-free episodes, and you get them a day early as well.
Yeah, do that. Rate us, you know. We want ratings, especially of the good variety.
Yes.
Share this with people. We want you to share this with as many people. If you like the show, you think your friends would, share it with them. And subscribe.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's everything today.
That is.
Yeah. Thank you for listening, guys.
And as always, Godspeed, Starseeds.